everyone. Happy New Year. This is Megan Marie, as always, and I want to thank you for tuning in to the Six Crystal Habit Podcast. So we're back after a nice long break for the holidays, and I hope that you had a fantastic time with family and friends and had a bit of time to yourself to get some games in. As for this episode of the podcast, we're going to take a look at what is going to be big in 2012, because we're not just excited about 2012 because of what we're working on, but also because we love to play games, and there's some very fun offerings on the horizon. We'll also take a look at what it explore what it means to hit alpha, because our team recently did that for Tomb Raider, and we'll share kind of what the dev process will be like moving forward. Lastly, we'll end with our Take 5 segment, an update on the current Crystal Dynamics job listings, and the final question in this month's Tomb Raider trivia contest with a very cool Tomb Raider North Face jacket on the line, which was previously only made available for developers and employees of Crystal Dynamics, so it's quite a catch. Hope you enjoy the podcast. All right, for our first segment, we're going to talk about what's big in 2012, whether it be conventions or games that we're excited for, because as it turns out, we don't just make games, we get to play them too on our free time. So with me, I have Carl Stewart, who everyone knows.
Hello. Carl. How's everybody doing? Well, not that you can answer me.
Yeah. One-sided communication. All right, and then I also have Brent Dady, who's our senior brand manager.
You know.
So we like games. We're going to talk about them. We actually have a fantastic infographic that Kotaku put out called 2012, A Video Gamer's Guide. So we're going to go and take a month-by-month look. It's funny, early in 2012, everything is really fleshed out. And then as you go, it's just like, there'll be lots of games.
Yeah.
TBD.
That's right, like on the right, to be determined. There's like, let's have a look. There's 20 games there.
When
it's
to
like
be determined.
Nobody knows, and I would hedge a bet that it's going to be quite a few of those. Don't even make
those
this
March
year.
Games yeah, move out.
As soon as you get into September, October, and November, it just like just plan every night and weekend you are going to be on your console. Of
mind
course,
you, this year has
something.
Been really hard.
Spending
for me.
Money.
I've had a stack of games sitting by my TV for so long. Same. So over the holiday period, I managed to catch up on a few.
Yep.
But I've reached a point where if you know only a few games managed to get my attention for more than an hour, if after 30 or 40 minutes, they're not getting me, it's like, gone.
Plug in a game for a little bit, kind of see what it's about, experience it so you can contextualize it and that. But yeah,
but
I
you're
agree.
More hardcore.
Do your
than
homework.
Any of us,
quote unquote.
It
do your
is
homework.
Kind of doing
Megan
homework.
Is the most hardcore gamer of any of us here, because over the holidays, she said, oh, I played this game and about 10 hours in, my character disappeared and I ran around.
You took two Xboxes to Minnesota, right?
All I could see was the character's shadow for about an hour and a half.
Shadows
I was like,
and guns.
You still played. After it broke for an hour and a
half,
I would have been like, after 30 seconds, be like, off.
When the game started, when like the world started disappearing, I was like, all right, I don't think I can contend with my invisible character anymore. It was sad. So in January, looking at this infographic, it's actually pretty exciting. There's Final Fantasy, I wanted to say X2, I'm going into the past. 13-2 is one of the major January releases. And then we also
it is, and because that's obviously part of our global team, it's kind of funny because it's shut down our communication for at least 2 or 3 weeks whilst we just let them get on with it.
Yeah, so much.
We're just like saying to the other teams, don't even bother talking to us. Just do what you got to
do.
Do
your thing.
Do your thing. Put it out there.
I'm excited. I want to play it. I actually didn't have a chance to play the first one. RPGs are so hard for me to do right now just because my schedule, but Lightning and all of them are so fantastic. I love the characters. I need to find time to play the original, and they just look so much more badass in 13-2. So I need to find time to do that.
I love playing it for a chunk of time, but I don't have that much time. I wish I really
it's
wish I had enough
I
time.
Did.
Seriously
I
involved
did.
Game. I love it though.
But it's shaping up. It's looking great. I've heard a lot of positive things about it, so that's exciting. Never Dead is one that kind of snuck up on me. I totally forgot about that. It's the one where the guy he gets dismembered and he's still alive and like his head and his arms
what?
Will roll around and then you can just kind of put him back together.
Is it a developer? I don't even know it. I should know it, but I don't.
I don't remember. It might be Tecmo.
Never Dead.
No. It's
a great concept for a game.
A
I want to play it.
Game.
Sounds splatterhousey.
I forget if it's Tecmo. I'll look it up and I'll amend the comments.
It's got a Japanese vibe to it. So
action game?
Look at that. Yeah. Final Fantasy
it's
never did in Soul Calibur.
Very cool. And then
is there a Japanese
Calibur,
thing going on here?
Early releases in January. And then we have CES, which is actually
yes.
going on while we're recording
we,
this.
We made an announcement. I've decided that there's a number of shows which I'm going to try and probably mark off my calendar. I got asked to go to CES for a two-hour meeting.
Mm.
And I thought, flying into Vegas for 2 hours, you know what, we can do it over the phone.
Phone conference time.
Yeah.
Not unless you're gambling.
Yeah, I just I did Vegas so many times last year, and we did so much traveling last year that I'm having to look at these shows and think.
You can hand one of the Vegas ones off to me because I've still never been to Vegas.
You've never been to Vegas?
I flew in past Vegas. Well, I landed in the Vegas airport, drove to an event at the Red Rock, which is like outside of Vegas,
that's where Dice
and then
is
left
normally.
10 hours later. So I never got to see any of actual Vegas.
Wow.
Someday.
Yeah, that was actually
that's
my
crazy.
When I did, we went there for Arkham Asylum, picked up a few awards a couple of years ago. That was my first time going all the way out to Red Rock. That's a hike outside Vegas.
It's a nice setup.
Yeah, taxi drivers don't like to go out there.
No, they don't.
No, it's far.
So February.
But GameStop Manager Show. I promise we will try to get you to the GameStop Manager Show.
I never got to go to the GameStop Manager Super Show fun. When I worked at Game Informer, and it's like we were owned by them.
It's fun. Someday. It's a lot of work. Yeah, on our side.
We keep you busy.
So February, we have the Dice Summit, which we were just talking about, and also big, big release of the PS Vita.
You missed the Toy Fair.
And Toy Fair. I didn't know how relevant that was to our audience.
Be at the Toy Fair for all of our licensing.
I'll make it relevant. I like toys. we can talk about toys and action figures.
Yeah,
that'd be awesome.
I've been asked to go to the Toy
That's
Fair.
That's a whole
this
other
is
podcast.
This is my first time going to a Toy Fair. That's going to be interesting, but I've been asked to go and
pick up some samples.
Do some work. Yeah.
Bring back some swag for us. My
Vita.
Desk isn't full
Yes,
enough.
Vita. I have it pre-ordered.
We've had one in the office. I haven't had a chance to look at it and play with it yet, but like it's pretty cool looking. Just kind of need to look at. Let's see the launch lineup. We have a lot of things like.
I just
want
to play Uncharted.
I just want
to play Wipeout.
Yeah, Escape Plan, Gravity Rush, Hot Shot Golf. Hot Shot's always like the first.
I had that
on
my
PSP.
Yeah.
Little
Japan
Deviants.
Import.
That was one. Little Deviants was one that I think was one of the first ones they demoed. Touch My Katamari.
That
Katamari
sounds
is,
phallic.
It does. Katamari is just like great.
Would you like to? Would you like to play Touch My Katamari?
It seems like it'd be a great fit for the Vita. And then Uncharted, Wipeout, Army Corps of Hell. Is that one of ours? That's one of ours, isn't it?
I couldn't tell you.
Square Enix family.
Yeah, possibly.
Good title.
So
stands out.
And then also on the console releases for February, things like Azura's Wrath. I've heard a lot about that. Darkness 2.
Darkness 2 is in February. Wow, doesn't
already?
Oh, that's already.
Man,
that's
I saw so a cool. demo of that at PAX. That game is. That
it's intense.
Shit crazy
it's intense.
Looking.
Syndicate, you got a friend working on Syndicate, Brent, didn't it? So you'll be able to tell us if it's good before we buy it.
Twisted Metal, Resident Evil,
or I might get a free copy.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I was gonna say.
There's lots of things I'm excited to play in February too. So like January and February are actually shaping up to be pretty decent when it comes to core releases.
First quarter is the new fourth quarter.
Yeah, no kidding. March is what I'm excited about. You want to know why?
Let me guess.
Hold on, let me
guess.
Let's see. We got
Mass Effect.
Tiger Woods Golf.
Yeah, sports.
Mass Effect.
Yeah, Mass Effect.
Yeah, I can't wait for that. That's number. I have a list of my top 10. That's number 4.
I'm
amazingly.
Playing,
amazingly,
actually, the Game Informer article was really, really good when they announced.
Wow, that's a quick turnaround.
That's very quick.
That's Bethesda, right?
Yeah.
Dragon's Dogma. I've been hearing some interesting things from that in terms of. I think that's the Capcom game, right? That one. I've been hearing stuff. Very interesting things.
Kid
Max Payne. That's
number 5 on my list of top 10.
And then Resident Evil Raccoon City, Operation Raccoon City. Did you guys see the trailer they released?
It's very cool. Very cool trailer.
It's insane. I'm very excited for that one. I like the early Resident Evil games, so it'd be cool to see that. Silent Hill, Street Fighter, Yakuza. There's lots of interesting things, but Mass Effect is definitely the one that I
I still think the best thing in March is going to be GDC parties. There always is.
GDC parties, as long as the food's good.
It's always the best parties. We're going to be there at Force Recruiting.
Yeah,
recruiting loads of people.
That'll be
our primary
outlet for GDC is
yes,
going to be recruiting.
Hardcore. We need people. We need loads of people.
Yeah,
for
awesome.
This new IP we keep talking about. Loads of people.
All right, on to April. This is interesting. I didn't know that they were making a Game of Thrones game.
An RPG.
Do either of you guys have an idea of how
it's
been shaping up or anything?
I've seen graphics screenshots.
I've seen a couple screenshots. I haven't seen anything.
I think
else
it's Eastern
it.
European developer, but don't quote me on that.
Wow.
Right.
I have stayed away from Game of Thrones until this year, so I'm going to watch all of Game of Thrones and all of Sons of Anarchy. So
when does Game of Thrones come out
anything.
On DVD? Because I still haven't
done
seen
a new
it.
Season soon. They what do they call that when not the green light when they accelerate the green light for the next season? I can't remember.
Sure.
What they put it on the fast track. That's what they call it
that's
in Hollywood.
True.
So it's coming out this year.
Yeah, I had
That'd
to wait.
Awesome.
I don't like watching TV live. I want to watch it all in like one sitting. So
I had to
I've
do
read,
Game of Thrones.
I've read the
so
books
I geeked
now.
Out on it so hard.
But
fast
I don't know
track.
Anything about
I like that
the
word fast track. That's
fast
like,
track.
That's like line producer.
Yeah.
You know where that came from?
Key grip.
You know where line producer came from?
No.
Mm-mm.
I read this in a book recently, actually.
Cocaine?
Where did I read it from? I think, sorry, I don't know whether it was Steve Jobs thing or the Pixar one. But a line producer is like a person who, you know, you have this whole P&L for making a movie or whatever it may be. And
there's
the key things, such as, you know, like the actors or actresses or whatever it may be. But there's a line drawn through the middle of the PL, and everything below that line is their responsibility, and they're the ones who obviously have to keep it tight. So a line producer, that's
cool. Good knowledge. Didn't know that.
Yeah. It's a lot more detailed than that, but I don't have enough time to go into that. I'm not going to bore you all with it, but it is actually the stuff the they enough. Have to do yeah. is pretty cool.
We aim to educate.
As a line producer, they are the hard nuts of any production.
So, in addition to April housing Game of Thrones, it also is time for PAX East.
And also Spec Ops The Line, which has one of the best trailers I've ever seen.
Glazed over that one.
If you guys haven't seen that trailer with the Bjork music, it's an amazing trailer.
Oh,
set in Dubai. It's really such a cool trailer.
I remember seeing it a couple of, I think maybe two pre-E3s ago.
Yeah, it was
looking decent then. I just haven't been following it since
then. I have to admit, I have stayed away from watching video game trailers over the last couple of months. Because working on hours, all I've done is digest movie trailers. Movie trailers, movie trailers. Movie trailers are the new video game trailers.
I can agree with that.
So I am.
They tend to push the medium.
Trying to stay away from constantly just watching
the
video game trailers over and over and over again.
Batman trailer over and over and still get chills the 35th time you've seen it.
It's awesome.
Epic.
Prometheus, that's fucking cool.
So PAX East, I went to my first PAX this year. I went to PAX Prime. I haven't been to PAX East, but that was a pretty fun show. So PAX East is something I'm looking forward to. Do we have any plans for out there?
Let me see. April. No, I don't know. No. I'll confirm right now.
Not at the moment. PAX Prime.
Confirmed. I know. I'm running through World my schedule exclusive. In my head. World exclusive. Carl says we will not be there.
We will do something big at PAX Prime, I would assume. Huge consumer show later in the year. Much later.
What's great is that you don't know whether I'm lying or not, as I'm not going to tell you.
This is actually my way of just out. Carl.
Oh, by the way, Carl, what are we doing?
Do we need someone? Do we need someone to head out to a show? Volunteering?
I tell you what, I lie. We're not going to be on the floor. We're not going to be showing public content, but we might be showing something behind closed doors.
There we go. That's something. It's exciting. All right, so May, the title on this infographic is May. No one cares about May. And the title says, seriously, May sucks.
F May.
I don't know, May.
So
May.
It doesn't look like there's anything really going on in May.
May could show potential in time. You know what's going to happen is May will
somebody will make it a window.
Because the way I look at it right now is that November will be dominated by one or two games. You'll have your usual end of fiscal year where people dump all the games in March. There's going to be two or three big games to try and compete in and around the Madden thing like we did with Batman and all the rest of the games. May will become a window. I tell you now.
It'll be Rockstar.
In the next two or three years, it'll become
something
a window.
Big will take advantage
Rockstar's
of it.
Rockstar's proven that you can drop a game in the middle of summer and people will buy it.
If you can release a game on Christmas or a movie on Christmas Day and make $300 million, you can put a game out in May and make money.
Mm-hmm. Well, May, even if there's not much going on in terms of game releases, we will be crazy here in the studio. May is leading up to E3. So what'll your May look like in terms of travel?
My May will probably be on the road for 3 weeks.
Where? Everywhere?
Let me see. I'm running through my schedules in my head. We have E3 Judges Week, which is going to be sort of the second week before E3.
Mm-hmm.
And then before that, we'll have Europe and Japan. So yeah, my schedule is going to be hectic this year.
Showing off lots of new and exciting content to people behind the scenes.
We will.
It's there.
I don't tell anybody what it is just yet.
We promise you that new and exciting content is there on the horizon. All right,
a lot of miles this year.
How many did you hit last year?
162, I think it was.
That's
so this year's
not 162 miles.
No, 162,000
miles.
miles.
You need to buy carbon offsets for that. That's very bad for the environment, Carl.
Telling me.
So all that preparation in May will be getting ready for June, which June is the big month of the year. That's the big showstopper E3.
Yep.
So
that's go big or go home.
And we don't go home.
That's what I say. Exactly.
So E3
and I'm excited for E3. We're in E3 planning right now. We're talking to all the teams, LA and territories, and gearing up and going through all the inventory of bits and pieces that we're booking. It's fun stuff.
Yeah.
It's just amazing that we're happening right now. Like we're planning and talking about it right now, 6 months away.
It'll be interesting to see if I can get out on the show floor for a couple of minutes this year.
No,
see?
We're going to lock you in a room. We're going to purposely lock you in a room for the entire show.
I want to see the Wii U. I feel
who?
The Wii U. I feel like last year I didn't have a chance to really digest and see what it was all about, and I still, you know, I've seen the hardware, I've seen a couple of trailers of content, but I kind of want to see it and hold it and find out what it's really about. So that's my goal for E3 this year.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Never underestimate Nintendo. That's what I always say.
Mm-hmm. All right, on to July, which is his National Air Conditioning Appreciation Month. I can get behind that. So San Diego Comic-Con is like my personal convention baby every year. That's the one that I look for.
Who are you dressing up as this year? Do you know?
She can tell you. Oh,
Yelena from Deus Ex.
Are you going to do that?
I'm figuring out currently how to make myself 7 feet tall with stilts.
Holy.
Yep.
I had to figure out a way. Just pick something simple, no?
Nope. I had to pick something to top Anya, and I was like, oh, augmented human being. There we go.
That's the problem. That's harder. Like, every year you got to turn. That's like Michael Jordan. The reason he got out of the dunk contest is because every year he had to go bigger and bigger and bigger, and he had to quit eventually. So you're just
going
to get there.
I'm going to eventually be like, all right, done. Where do I go from here? So that's
did you see?
He'll just retire.
On that note, did you see Megan's Japanese clip?
Oh, God.
Yes, it was amazing.
If anybody hasn't seen it, go to Megan's blog and have a look at her little Japanese piece.
It's exactly what you expect from the Japanese.
So you know, that was
exactly what you expect.
It's iconic. That's something you go show your grandchildren in years to come. Say, I was on the show. Big in Japan when I was
kid. Three sisters on the town and... Yeah, it was interesting. It was an interesting highlight. Definitely the coolest in my portfolio at that point in time. But so yeah, we'll have some things going on at San
Diego. Comic-Con's gonna be big. Actually, I've got a couple of things upper sleeves for that. Obviously, Comic-Con. My big thing about Comic-Con is that obviously it's a great opportunity to show content, but you can't just show the same content as E3 because it's not that type of show. So we're planning some panels and. And then we're going to do some behind-the-scenes stuff as well, which we'll be able to get out there because there's a lot of people who can't get to San Diego and a lot of people who hear the word Comic-Con, but they don't know what it entails and how big it is.
It's really Entertainment Con now at this point.
It is.
I want to record
media.
All of that.
Mass Media Con.
That's not as
sounds
mass
very
media
corporate-y.
Con. It's like oppressive sounding. So, yeah, we have some very exciting things planned for San Diego Comic-Con. I can't wait to get out there and to talk with people and meet with people because that is the thing. It's a convergence of people who appreciate all facets of popular culture. So it's really fun to be there for, like, long-term Tomb Raider fans and then also for people who are just into new and exciting entertainment. So
yeah, and it amazes me here. They say they have The Amazing Spider-Man as a July release, yet they don't put the fact that The Dark Knight Rises is going to be the month before on June 12th. That's the highlight.
During E3, is it?
No, E3 this year starts on my birthday, the 5th.
All right.
My birthday is the first day of E3.
Peace out, guys. I'm not going to any parties tonight. I'm going to go see...
Yeah, I will be doing a midnight showing. I did that last time as well.
Absolutely.
Awesome.
No doubt. So on to August. That's when the international travel really starts. We've got Gamescom, which is a huge German show. PAX, which that one's out in Boston.
We got IDEF, Eurogamer, then we got Rage and Igrimir, all those starting not so long after it. Yeah, so we will be extremely busy in that period of time. I just kicked something on the floor and we just pretended to try and edit this together again.
I could have done it seamlessly. But
no, just tell people that it was a nice little break there because Carl's swinging around in his chair and he kicked
Carl
the plug.
Carl couldn't keep it cool. He lost.
He
cracked.
He shut everything
Thinking
down.
About how busy he was, he started getting
You would
shakes.
Have been a bad spy.
I was twitching.
So, yeah, we'll have to kind of divide and conquer and get people out to different shows. And I would love to do some more. I mean, we're thinking of doing some more community events. And it's going to be a very exciting, very busy time of year.
Yes, extremely. That's when I told my wife not to expect me home for about 90 days or so.
Oh, man. So life of game promotion.
She's not looking forward to it.
All right, so that's August. We move on to September, Tokyo Game Show. Another very, very exciting show. We've got some cool stuff planned again. Not really going to get into specifics. But
I can't wait. I love going to Tokyo. I really do. Like last year,
awesome.
I think I did 3 or 4 times, and before that was 3 or 4 the following year, the previous year. And I can't wait to go back. I think I'm there in March.
Best food.
March and
the best food.
June this year as well.
Food is amazing there. It's so fresh. And
all right, so the rest of the year, September, October, November, and December, they are usually very busy, but because we don't know exactly what's releasing, a lot of dates are still to be determined in terms of
I know what's releasing.
Many games. You do? Yeah, but you can't share.
There's another Call of Duty.
SEC at the end. Call of Duty something. There's
probably calls an Assassin's Creed. And
there's the ones that you can expect pretty much each year, yeah. So what do they have on this Kotaku list? They have Pretty Sure Things. Aliens, Colonial Marines. Oh, Animal Crossing.
Tomb Raider.
I'm an Animal Crossing nut. I have to admit that. I used to play it on my DS all the time. New Assassin's Creed, BioShock Infinite, which looks fantastic.
Yes.
I was afraid when you said
number three in my top five.
I was afraid you were going to tell me, like, you're a furry, or what do you call those people who dress up furry costumes?
I'm really into animals.
I was like, Megan, don't go there with this, please.
Animal Crossing.
Animal Crossing. Okay.
It's
you're
a fantastic
not a furry.
And fun game. Borderlands 2, so psyched for that
Stoked.
Game. I love the humor in that game. Call of Duty something, I like
that.
Is that
the name of it? Awesome.
Call of Duty something or other. Counter-Strike,
yes.
Diablo 3.
My number one, Counter-Strike. Let's do it.
Fable the Journey, is that the on Rails one they showed off?
Yes, connect.
Okay. Fortnite, wow.
What is
Epic,
that?
Epic's potentially
oh, that's
turning
that Epic
that
game.
One.
That
yep, that's
awesome.
The Epic one. They're potentially turning that around pretty quickly. Guild Wars, Halo 4, man. Can you imagine the day that Halo 4
What's
comes
Halo?
Out? Halo? Halo
Never heard
what?
Of that franchise.
Lollipop Chainsaw.
Yes.
You guys had to have seen the trailer for that.
Yeah, it's funny.
Top 10. Yeah. Number 10.
Lego
online.
Batman.
It's going to be awesome. Crazy.
Journey. That is one that I keep forgetting about, but Journey
the downloadable PSN game.
What's
the name of that game company?
That game company. Yeah. They have continued to impress
amazing.
Me.
I was like, what's the name of that game?
That game company.
Oh, yeah, that
He's
game
on first.
So that one's really exciting. Metal Gear Rising Revengeance.
Yep.
That is the title.
I don't care about any of these games apart from Tomb Raider.
MGS.
Really? Nothing? Nothing's
My year will be consumed
by
Tomb Raider.
Well, absolutely. But like when you get 5 minutes of gaming, there's nothing on that list. That's just.
I'm interested to read the article, actually, of
XCOM
Enemy Unknown. That's Oh, yeah. Yeah, probably. That's
Max Payne.
Whatever they put that out.
You can play that?
Yeah, but the only one that I really care about is Tomb Raider. Sorry.
And then other 2012 possibilities, Grand Theft Auto, The Last Guardian. Man, I haven't heard about anything in The Last Guardian for so long.
I've heard bad things. As in development problems, unfortunately.
That game looked so great.
I can't wait to play the game.
StarCraft, World of Warcraft. Yeah, so there could be some big releases.
No Fez?
GTA this year.
Do you guys know about Fez?
Fez is still not out.
Fez, no. Yeah. Fez is like my number one most anticipated game, indie game.
Perpetually
delayed.
Just like, yeah, TBD.
They, right. Polytron, the guys that are making that, put out a hilarious blog post / press release about how 2011 was just a bad year and 2012 is the new model and that year's going to be a lot better for them. It was pretty funny.
2011.
Yeah.
All right. Well, there are lots and lots and lots of exciting things going on next year. Lots of,
This year.
Oh, goodness. You're totally right. I've been doing that all week.
Do you still write 2011 in your checks?
To be inspired by.
Do you still write checks?
Yes.
Yeah.
Are you serious?
So
I have to give it for my horse feed when I, you know, commute to work.
Chicks.
Hopefully you guys listening. Hopefully you guys listening will be just as excited to check out some of these games this year.
I will. I like. There's loads of games. I'll obviously
bumper crop
beside my TV and try and get through them.
It's just good to see like a healthy number of games coming out.
It's a very good
year
for video games.
It's good.
The industry will definitely grow this year.
I think there's a few that are probably still to be announced yet, to be honest.
Yeah, there have to be surprises, right?
But yeah. And there's the old favorites that we're still waiting, like Aliens, Colonial Marines.
Ghost Recon.
Forever.
Didn't see that in there.
All right. Well, thank you for joining me, you guys. I appreciate it. And we will be back in just a little bit to talk about hitting the recent milestone of Alpha, which is very exciting for the Tomb Raider team. So,
cool. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Later.
Bye-bye.
All right, thanks for listening to the second segment of our podcast, which is called Hitting Alpha. So with me, I have two awesome guests. I'm excited to get you guys in here because I know you guys are always so busy. I have senior producer Kyle Pichel. Hello.
Hello.
And then I also have the senior art director, Brian Horton.
Hey, Megan.
We recently hit Alpha. That's very exciting.
Yeah.
But I want to start in the broadest sense, as I said, with what are the major stages and milestones of game design? Who wants to take that?
Kyle will take that one.
Kyle?
Yeah, so game development, we pretty much segment up into some major milestones just to help us understand when we should be making decisions. We start in the very beginning with a concept phase where we try to understand the next big idea and what do we want to accomplish. Mm-hmm. And from there, we sit down with corporate and everyone here included and try to figure out whether we're ready to progress into the next phase and have a good understanding of what we want to accomplish. And we move into what we call pre-production, or colloquially pre-pro. Mm-hmm. And we just start to understand, let's test those assumptions. Let's make sure that that big idea does have some feet. We understand what it would take to pull it off. And we spend a number of months working through that. Then again, visit with corporate and everybody here. And then we turn our attention and get a little bit more manpower behind us by recruiting more people from the studio, from other teams to come over and help us out. And we turn towards Vertical Slice, which is where we build basically an entire section of the game from start to finish so that we would understand what would the front end potentially look like, what's the mm-hmm. game like, what's the end experience, see everything kind of working in concert in one space. And then we turn after that and sitting down with corporate again and understanding what we want to accomplish, we move towards production, which is basically the phase of getting it done, where we make everything, right?
All right.
Which ends in alpha, which is where we are now, which is so exciting. And alpha is the line by which we have everything together. And there's a little check boxes of like, does it work in compliance with the console hardware that you're looking for? Does it have, how stable is it? Is everything in there? And so alpha really is the line for us is when what we refer to as content's done. Everything's there. All the ingredients are in. The recipe's been mixed. Mm-hmm. We have everything put together. And then that next phase of alpha into beta is when we polish everything. So we take areas that have already been completed and put them together. So we don't really like to call things levels per se, but mm-hmm. we have areas of the game, and then we just start to say, hey, what would make this area better from a pacing perspective? Where's Laura on her journey? And we just polish that up a little bit more.
If you think of it like in film terms, some people watch maybe DVDs and how they make films. Think of alpha sort of like getting the film shot. It's all in the can, but mm-hmm. you have all this raw footage. And now you need to put that raw footage together and edit it and make, you know, the awesome movie. And that's sort of where we're at with the games, is that we've got all this great raw footage. You could look at all the dailies across the whole thing, but it still needs a lot of editing to get the right formula. So it's an exciting time to have all this great footage and all this great material.
Alpha seems like a good place to be.
It's kind of the best time for me. I love it.
Yeah. The team's all excited. Hitting this milestone is probably very, it makes everybody excited and enthusiastic moving forward.
Absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, I'm with Kyle. I really love this time because, you know, when you have all your ingredients and it's just about polishing it and bringing it to luster, that's when it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of work, but it's actually becomes a little easier for us too, because we're not trying to solve those big problems like, well, what does this want to be? Mm-hmm. It's more like, how do we make this great?
How to make it better.
And that's the fun stuff.
Yeah. The day after hitting alpha is probably the highlight of the project for you, because, or at least for me, because you stop and you play the whole thing.
Yeah,
like mm-hmm. you invest all those hours where typically you don't have time to do all of those things. You're so myopic, and you get in there and you play the whole thing, and you're like, oh man.
Start to see the whole vision.
Yeah,
and
it's coming together, right? It's sort of that pride moment.
Fantastic. So stepping back for just a second, when I first saw the game, you guys were throwing around the vertical slice, you know, the term vertical slice when I was back at Game Informer. So specifically to vertical slices, was one of the first, it seems like it's one of the first stages where things are starting to come together. You're starting to see what the game could be. What are you looking for showing off in terms of gameplay or art or narrative? What are those key beats that you need to express to whether it's internal people or press when you're showing off the game?
It's a really, this studio has really been focused on selling the experience. Like, we needed to really establish who Lara was, you know, reestablish in a way, because, you know, we knew Lara from the past. So a big goal from Vertical Slice was retelling this origin story and really making people believe in, is this the Lara Croft that we can, A, believe is Lara, but at the same time saying something new. So that was our number one goal, was to say, we're establishing the survival theme, we're establishing Lara, and we're establishing the situation. So you really get an idea of the character of the island and you know, the ingredients that are going to make up the game, the pillars, as we call them. So the main pillars in whether it be navigation or smart, resourceful Lara or desperate combat, all those things had to be represented. And it was an exciting time as well for us, because it took us a while to really understand what that mix was. Mm-hmm. And it's really the hardest part when you're really redefining or defining a new game, is what are all the ingredients and how they all work together to make an experience. So we use that word a lot here, experience, because it is about fun. You know, it's making a great game, but we really wanted to wrap it into a really compelling narrative and really compelling characterization with Lara. So that's pretty much what the Vertical Slice is about for us.
And so now that we've hit alpha, what are those major goals? What have they shifted to in terms of, again, art or narrative or gameplay? What are people really focusing on moving forward?
We actually evaluate each and every area before we get started, and we say, okay, over this next window of time, what do we want to accomplish? But we go in to each area and try to figure out what needs to be brought to a greater height. Mm-hmm. Tone and mood wise, where do we have some rough edges that need to be adjusted? It's not uncommon for us to go into an area that previously was fairly static and say, oh, we need to add drama to this space, and it would seem appropriate for her character arc to be part of something that's on fire, or it's raining, or the weather and the time of day sort of stuff starts to come into such a way that you tell the story with the world as well as with the written script and the cinematics that we have. So we go into each area with these targeted teams and say, all right, we're going to spend X number of days in this area. What are the key pieces that we need to hit? Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's taking combat to another level of quality compared to where it was. Sometimes it's about exploring and navigation and making nooks and crannies because the space just wants to be something. So frequently we have a plan when we start, but until you actually see it mm-hmm. and sit inside the world, you're like, you know what this space really wants? It wants to have X. And then we say, can we afford putting X in there? And if so, we start to take action.
Yeah, and the other aspect that's important to that is since you now have everything and what it's adjacent to, you get a better idea of like, well, that was great in and of itself, but in context of the entire project, it either is too much or too little, or it needs some other ingredient. Mm-hmm. So because we worked in, we called them, mini vertical slices. Like we had vertical slice 1, 2, 3, 4. We sort of made little mini projects all throughout the development. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, those are still only in small slices. So you have to put all those vertical slices together, and now you've got a whole new product, and you have to really assess it in a new way.
So now you have alpha. You have all those slices you put together and can kind of see the narrative and see everything fleshing out for the first time.
Yep. Yeah. Well, once you stitch it together, you realize that you have your pacing's off.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
what was
a good idea 9 months ago is not a good idea today, kind of a thing, when you just came off of doing it ahead of time. So we start to rearrange
this. Do you spend the majority of time during development in the alpha stage, or is it actually in early pre-pro?
So that's kind of what's important. I think this development, we came up with a formula to make a vertical slice, right? And then what we realized is that was a good chunk of content. It wasn't just one level. It was literally a series of spaces stitched together. And we took that as a template for success, and we replicated that 4 times. So mm-hmm. vertical slice 1, 2, 3, 4. So that was kind of new for the studio, and mm-hmm. I think it's worked out really well for us, and it's something we'll probably continue going down in the future. So you're literally developing a quarter of the game at a time.
Great. So when do you start polishing? When do you start tweaking little combat values and art assets and all that? When does the real polish start?
Yeah. Now. We're here at now.
So you're balancing right now. You're balancing both some larger changes contextual to certain areas, and then also fixing tiny little things.
It starts first at that broad level, right? So you have to look at the big picture, and you make the big edits, and then mm-hmm. you start refining that down into small things. And the teams are structured in such a way where people are working no matter what. There's always something to do. So if there's a big picture thing moving around, but someone could be busy polishing a smaller element, that can happen. But we really want to make sure our big strokes are edited first, and then we start refining that down to the small polishing detail. That's the major goal right now, is to make sure those broad strokes and the edit and the pace, overall pacing, feels right first.
So when do you stop polishing? What is the context
beta.
Of that? Like, yeah, beta going gold. Can you kind of explain those to listeners?
Yeah, it's a great question. So in alpha, we spend several months just taking what we have to the next level, you know, taking it to 11, really, right? Mm-hmm. And then once you cross the threshold into beta, that's when you basically say, like, you're taking a test, pencils down, right? Like, now, all right, all the content creators walk away, right? Mm-hmm. Take the weekend off, go think about things, and those people who can fix bugs will be put full force on the project. So it's typically a period where you'd see a massive reduction of the amount of artists on the game. Mm-hmm. We usually like have to lock the door to keep Brian out of the room as we start to do things at the very end. And that's when your programmers and your level designers and some of the animators and scripters are in there actually working out the bugs. We spend time on bugs all the way throughout the project. Mm-hmm. We're always working on bugs, but that's when that's the exclusive focus of making sure that we have that all the way to zero.
And generally speaking, how long does beta last?
I've worked on games before where we've gone alpha, beta, gold the same day, right? So
That's not ideal, by the way.
That is the non-ideal way to do it. Whereas this project, I think we've been very strict with ourselves. And so an alpha period is a lengthy period, and a beta period is between your 2 and 3 month timeline of just making sure that things feel good and work appropriately. So everybody who's out there, you know, playing the game has a consistent experience, right? That they all kind of feel it, because crashing is never fun.
So what are you content creators doing during beta?
Well, I think Kyle was a little extreme. I think the artists are still fixing bugs, too. but also, there's a lot of support, right? There's marketing really starts to kick in. So I really turn my attention towards the presentation of the game
identity.
For the public, right? So I'll probably be doing a lot of marketing materials and things like that, and I'll be working with a smaller group of people to prepare those. Hopefully, helping out in whatever way I possibly can, you know, to help the game close strong, because we really value that bug fixing phase. It's one of those things that you could take great content and it can be ruined with bugs. So
yep, absolutely. So then, beta and going gold.
Yeah.
What's the going gold? That's the definitive end, correct?
Out yeah, of our that's hands. When they actually kick you out of the building. No, so going gold, when you say that you've gone gold, you've pressed the last disc, the last version of the disc, and it's a reference back to like the 1980s, about 85, somewhere in there, and really where electronic media didn't have a reference to the final version. And so when you look at other manufacturing processes, they usually make something out of gold. They have a gold stamp, they have a form, and then they actually press the rest of it. Well, with the digital media like CDs, we just stamp it on there. It's not exactly the same, mm-hmm. but it's referred to your gold disc. So you've gone gold master, going gold. It's all just references to the same moment where a bunch of nervous people are in a room and copy the files to the final disc the last time, and then somebody takes that disc personally and flies to the replication house and sits down and make sure that all the machines are replicating an exact copy, plays it at the manufacturer one last time, because that's the version that's going to have millions of duplicates made from it.
That must be terrifying and exciting at the same time.
Yeah,
that final day.
It's like kids leaving the house, I suppose. That's,
yeah. As a member of the press, Gone Gold to me always meant that a bottle of liquor showed up at my office for some reason. So they always send out bottles of Gone Gold champagne.
We need to celebrate. Why were we sending it to the press?
I don't know, but we always got chocolates or liquor. So it was exciting for us, too.
That's cool. Doesn't press also get gold discs? Don't they get advanced discs to play?
We do.
Yeah, and each manufacturer has them different. Like historically, there's been green discs, there's been red discs. There's that only work on certain kits or locked down for timelines.
Debugs.
Yeah, exactly. So
debugs were always a pain.
Everybody's in on the color scheme these days.
Yeah, but I think that the Gone Gold is now the universally accepted term for like we're ready to go, we're ready to rock and ship out. So
yeah, and it's even transcended more than games, right? It's software references it as well.
Yeah, awesome. All right. Well, I think that was very educational. Thank you both. I appreciate you taking time from your busy schedules, and I'll let you get back to Alpha.
All right. We're excited. Thank you.
Thanks,
Megan.
Hello, Carl.
Hello.
This is your favorite thing.
Oh, I'm live. I'm on.
Yes, okay, you're on. Sorry. I stealth start that time. All right.
Okay.
So we have our Take 5 segment, as always. There's actually a couple of tough ones in here for you this time.
Oh, dear.
Happy New Year, everybody, by the way.
Yes.
I think it's my first podcast of the new year. Happy
I know. Year. In the intro, I said they all had. I hope they had time to play some games. You know, family and friends are great, but hopefully they had time
to
gaming,
too. I did. Finally finished Uncharted.
Great. That was a lot of fun. All right. So question one. Will the Tomb Raider movie and the game follow the same narrative?
Our goal is yes. We've been working very closely with GK Films. Obviously, you cannot compress the size of a game into 90 minutes plus without making some changes. But what we've said so far, and what we need to say is that yes, we will take the same survivor element on an island. But apart from that, we can't go into too much detail because that's up to Mark and Hawk to kind of pull apart how they envisage telling that story and you
flesh
know
flesh out the script and all
yeah,
that.
Yeah, you know, we're close to it, but you know, unfortunately it's their baby. But they have said that yes, they want to tell the same story, and we've said it in the press release from day one that their goal and Graham's goal is to go back and reimagine Tomb Raider and tell the story of how
franchise.
Lara Croft becomes Lara Croft. So yes, it will take the same vein, but you know, I will say you cannot expect to get the exact same story you get from a 10-plus-hour video game into 90-plus minutes.
That goes for
maybe.
Anything, whether it be novelizations
exactly.
that are turned into movies and whatnot.
Yes.
So I think that's a safe assumption to make. All right, this is actually a super popular one I get because we have a huge level editing community and they've been
you
asking
say that
for a while.
And it frightens me every time.
So, will we release a level editor for the engine to allow people to mod in design levels?
We have no plans to do that right now. And I don't know whether we have plans on the books to actually do it for this title at all. If we do, we'll let you know. I love harking back to the old school Tomb Raiders where you can mod your own little story. But at this time, there is absolutely no plans to have that on the new Tomb Raider.
Okay. Question number
but
three.
But that, of course, won't stop people taking the PC version, extracting all the files, WinRARing them, and doing what they want. That's the that's the joy of having a PC game.
It'll happen. PC SKUs allow it to happen. All right. Question number three. How will Lara interact with water if she doesn't directly swim?
That has been a real bone of contention, people not liking the fact that I said that. She's not going to swim. So obviously we want to make sure that Lara feels a part of the world. So when she interacts with water, we've pushed really hard to make the physics feel like she's actually there. You'll see bubbles around her, ripples in the water. You'll see the full movement. I even saw a level yesterday which has some oil across the top of it from like an oil leak from some part of a building. And you can see the sort of glistening in the colors of all the rainbow bouncing off the water. It's phenomenal.
It
I'm looking
dangerous.
Forward to showing that. But, you know, as she interacts with that, you can see how that sort of breaks off into its own little ripples and ponds and pools and that. So yeah, the physics is obviously built to be able to make sure that we represent Lara in as close, I'll say the word real, but I don't like saying the word real, but as close to real world as possible in terms of interactions. But yeah, water is very important to us.
She's on an island, obviously, and we've seen like she'll wade in water, and
she'll wade in water, and
plays an element in some sort of the survival puzzle solving and whatnot.
Yeah, it plays a huge part. You see in the demo that we've shown so far how buoyancy and how the boxes kind of float, the flotsam and jetsam float all the way through the channel, and you know, obviously, you know, I've seen a lot of stuff. We've been working with the guys on a lot of stuff to bring a sense of real to the water and to the world. And even when she goes down to things like the beachside, you know, ripples of waves and sort of currents and motions of the ocean, it's very important that you get
motions of the ocean.
It's very important that you get that sort of randomized effect. The one thing I hate is when I play games and I'm able to go really up high and I can look down and you can see sort of the symmetry of these boxes of sort of sections of the ocean all mm-hmm. there put together. We've done our best to break away from that and bring a lot of randomization into our water.
Right. So that was when I remember playing Tomb Raider for the first time. That was one of the things that I loved, was just looking at the water. And at the time, it blew my mind. It was realistic looking, and I just sat there and make her swim.
I think it was probably
forever.
7 or 8 months ago. My office was on the far side of the building, and the guy right outside me was the guy who was in charge of water. Mm-hmm. And every day I walked out, I could see him painstakingly sitting there looking at how it crashed against rocks and how it moved. And after about 2 or 3 weeks, it came to life, like unbelievably. Mm-hmm. And it was more, it was almost hypnotic, because mm-hmm. it was like just standing looking out the window of the ocean. But no, it's another very important aspect of the game for us.
That's good news. Good to hear. All right, question number four. Most developers make a game for one platform and then port it over to another for release. So what is Crystal D doing?
The game is currently being developed for all three platforms in sync. Pretty much, I'm sure so the developers who listen to this, and they'll all feel like, you know, you try and keep them all in sync, and normally, 2-3 weeks possibly delay on any one platform. You know, generally, studios kind of push, unless you're a Sony studio, generally you sort of push into sort of the PC to 360, and you keep PlayStation 3 as close as possible to your timelines, and we're pretty much doing the exact same thing. We'll have more news on that as we go through the year, but, you know, right now, I've demonstrated the game to Microsoft, and then within 2 weeks been demonstrating the game to Sony playing on a PlayStation 3. So the goal is to make sure that they're all running as close to a tandem as possible. And, you know, where possible, of course, we'll make sure that when it comes to the platform, we'll place the platform strengths. You know, I literally sat there last week with Brent going through PC specs and making sure that we sort of push the game as hard as possible in that, and we're currently working with a couple of partners and deciding who they are going to come on board to help support some new tech on the PC side. So each platform will have its strengths. You know, we're working very closely with the first parties to make sure that we do things like, you know, capitalizing on memory usage and CPU usage and so on.
Great. And I swear I've asked this question dozens of times, but then I looked at my archive.
Oh, dear.
I guess we've never actually asked it on the Take Five segment. So this will be the definitive answer. Will Lara Croft ever wield dual pistols again?
Everybody wants to spoil things.
Yep,
you'll have to wait and see. Whether we do it this game or the next one, you know. I think what I'll say in relation to dual pistols, braids, locking
backpacks,
people in fridges, you know, the idea is that every time, as you play this game, you'll come across situations that become iconic and they define the future of our heroine. You know, if we decide that she's going to have dual pistols, then that moment you'll remember for the rest of your days as to how she got them.
Because you were there this time, you got to see it.
Exactly. You know, we picked up the franchise, as everybody knows, from Core. And, you know, when Core began, she was already established. And although we went back and tried to tell a bit of the story on Anniversary, really, there's no iconic moments, right? It's like, you know, the moment that Morgan Freeman sort of shows Batman the material that he's going to make his new mask out of. Like, you'll always remember that. You know, or James Bond sitting at the bar on the jumbo jet talking about the mixture of drinks and, you know, he's had seven of them or whatever it was. Like, they're moments that you'll remember. And our goal is to make sure that as we play through the series, you'll be able to look back and go, that was an iconic moment. That was something that will go down in history.
Great. And there'll be new iconic moments, too.
Exactly. I mean, don't rest on the fact that, you know, we've had probably 10 or 15 of them that people will go, oh, that's awesome. Like, obviously, we're reimagining the franchise, so there's a ton of stuff that we want people to look for the future and say,
defining
I remember
moments.
When she did that.
Great. Wow.
I remember
it.
When she flossed her teeth for the very first time.
The very first time. It was magical. Right. All right. Well, thank you for answering the questions and for being on the podcast.
You're
earlier.
Welcome. Is that it? That's cool. I can go back to lunch. Excellent.
I know. I always get you during lunch, but that's because nobody
it's the
ever
only
has anything
time
on their
my
schedule
door is,
during lunch.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
No problem. Bye-bye.
So to close out our show, we're taking another look at highlighting some HR positions, some jobs that are open here at Crystal Dynamics, because we are actively seeking new employees to welcome to the family. So today I have with me Casey Manning, and he's a recruiter here at Crystal Dynamics. Hi, Casey.
Hello, Megan. How are you?
Great. Good. Thank you. So do you want to detail two of the more juicy job openings that we have at the moment?
Sure, absolutely. Some of the positions that we are aggressively seeking talent for are a senior environment artist for one of our new IP teams, actually. And we're seeking someone with about 3 to 5 years of progressive experience as an environment artist who has worked on AAA titles creating detailed and exciting environments for action-adventure games. Mm-hmm. Some of the specific qualifications we target are proficiency within Maya, because as I'm sure most of our audience is aware, we are a Maya studio. Mm-hmm. Any experience as a lead is a huge plus. We definitely like to get the best of the best in here. And some of the things we look for specifically in a portfolio, like the detail actually, as I get a lot of requests from applicants, is, you know, how should I develop my portfolio? What it looks at over other things. So I'll go through that really quickly.
Great.
Pretty much any 3D modeler or texture artist that applies or environment artist should include, you know, the best examples of your work, renders in addition to in-game screenshots, and it'd be helpful if it was specific to the particular genre that we're looking for, which, of course, with that particular IP, details to be announced later in the year.
Super secret for now.
Absolutely. 3D mesh shots that show efficiency, good work process, and overall neatness. We look for 3 to 5 texture sheets within the portfolio that include diffuse, spec, and normal maps that shows correct use of maps, efficient use of UV, space, and artistic skill. And finally, for those environment artists out there, we like to look at examples of lighting if they have it. It's not necessarily a huge requirement, and not all environment artists included in their portfolio, but it's in our opinion from our hiring managers and from our art directors that all 3D artists should be able to do basic lighting, and it really turns a good artist into a great artist or a great artist into an excellent artist. For all your artists out there, definitely put some lighting examples in that portfolio.
So not necessarily required, but if you got it, flaunt it.
Absolutely.
Show off your light.
Absolutely.
Okay, great.
And some other positions that we're looking for are basically lead designer positions, again, for our super secret new IP project. And what we look for in design candidates are usually at least 4 years of level design experience or systems design experience, which would be combat design or others, a really strong background in AAA game production. I would say there is more competition within design than in probably any other position out there, and so we really do dig deeply into what people have done before and if those games have hit that AAA, you know, 90 Metacritic level that we like to see. We'd like to see at least two shipped AAA titles, specifically in the action-adventure, third-person action-adventure wheelhouse, if you will, that we specialize in. And we'd like to see strong familiarity or strong experience with scripting, some of your basic scripting softwares out there. I'm sure our audience is familiar with, like, Kismet, Lua, or text-based scripting. And a great thing for a designer to have as you're putting your ideas on paper or in-game, you know, really strong communication skills and the ability to articulate their ideas and how they want a player to interact with the world around them.
Great. That's very, very helpful, very in-depth. I appreciate it. So where can one see our full list of job openings, and how does one apply?
Sure. To see a full list of our current job openings, please check out our website at www.crystald.com and click on our jobs tab. There we'll pull up an entire list of all the openings we have available in the studio. And to apply through that site, we are currently powered by JobVite, which is a great social-based job application and applicant tracking system we've just put in place. And through there, you'll send your application directly to me, or you can email me directly at cmanning@crystald.com. For just a general email address to send your applications to or your resumes to, you can try jobs@crystald.com. Or if you're trolling LinkedIn, you're looking for opportunities out there, feel free to find me on there. Just type in Casey Manning. I'll pop up. You'll notice me.
All right.
It's pretty apparent, and you should be good to go.
Great. Well, thank you so much for popping in and letting us know what's up in the job sphere here.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, Megan.
Thanks for listening to the show. To close out this episode, we've got another Tomb Raider trivia contest as promised. This time the prize is a one-of-a-kind Tomb Raider North Face jacket, which is an item previously reserved only for Crystal Dynamics employees, so it's quite exclusive. Additionally, we're throwing in a sizable survival goodie bag, which includes a compass, headlamp, stainless steel water bottle, hand warmers, high-energy food, and a bunch more. I wouldn't try adventuring only with these items in your pack, but they're without a doubt handy to have around. So, on to the question. The final question is, what is the mysterious Bermuda Triangle-esque location in which the newest Tomb Raider title unfolds? So make sure to take all three answers and plug them into TombRaider.com/podcast to enter the running. Best of luck. Until next time.